Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is The Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Depending on who you are, where you live, and how long you've been living there, the term gentrification can mean very different things. Sometimes good, and sometimes bad. It is a conversation and sometimes an argument that has been growing in D.C. for years. But it is also the focus of a new play titled The Intruders on stage this week at Silver Spring's Black Box Theater. And tonight, we're discussing the play and the issue. My guests are playwright Hope Lynn Price Lindsay and Howard University Professor Emerita and Director Vera Katz. If you have a comment about gentrification, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hope and Professor Katz, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Hope, let me start with you. Why did you feel the need to produce a play on D.C. gentrification?
Well, you know, I'm not a native Washingtonian, but I first came to Washington in the 1970s as a student at Howard University. So I came to D.C. when it was Chocolate City. And
we'll give you an honorary D.C. residency.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. And over the years, I've watched the transition from when gentrification first began until now. And, you know, I just noticed, you know, that many people, especially people of color who had been historically, who had been living in historically black neighborhoods, were being, you know, many were being displaced, some because things, things had changed in the city and things became unaffordable. So many people had to leave, and with this new influx of, you know, gentrifiers, you know, who came in with money and were able to bring, you know, lots of new industry from restaurants and, you know, different types of stores, and that made it pretty unaffordable for maybe some of the native people who had been living in those communities before. And so I just saw lots of different issues, and I tried to look at it from all perspectives, and I thought, okay, I want to say something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I express myself creatively is through theater. And so I decided to write about it.
I like the dramatic pause, the way I express myself, pause, through theater. Insert a more descriptive term there. You know, Professor Katz, was this a difficult issue for you to tackle as a director? I would imagine with so much experience under your belt, as well as you mentoring great stars, was this a challenge?
Well, Mr. Fisher, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
I want to say that I've always felt that theater should speak important messages and not just be fluff. And when Hope showed me this beautiful play, I got excited because it presents both sides in a caring way. Now, what's exciting about this for me as a director is that we have black and white actors on stage duking it out verbally. And, you know, you see that on film. You don't often see it on stage, certainly not in community theater in a small house the way the Black Box is, so that the audience is right up close to the tension between black and white on this topic that matters to them both. And that's very important because as one of Hope's lines in the play is, we all have to learn to live together, don't we? And that's, of course, at the end of the play. And so I think that the play is going to inform the audience that you can be locked into your point of view, and you have valid reasons for feeling and thinking the way you do on either side, yet you have to combine and come, you know, together, you know that song. So I was honored to work on a topic like this. I am Caucasian, Jewish, and I am very aware of the tensions between us and races, but also being from a minority myself, I'm very aware of how people tend to feel picked upon or marginalized, let's put it that way, marginalized. And so I like to do plays like this. This wasn't a challenge. This was exciting to work on.
I want to share the definition of gentrification, and then Hope, let's talk a little bit about this, where it says, you know, the process whereby the character of a poor urban area is changed by wealthier people moving in, improving housing, and attracting new businesses, typically displacing current inhabitants in the process. It goes on to say the process of making someone or something more refined, polite, or respectable. So, Hope, as it relates to what's happening in D.C., this definition does not include the issue of race, but the reality is, as Professor Katz just said, that you have black actors and white actors duking it out. That is playing out right now in communities across the DMV. Is gentrification a good or bad thing from your perspective?
Well, as I say in the line when I introduced the name of the play, The Intruders, it's, you know, when white urban pioneers invade a historically black community, a silent battle ensues. So many of these battles, I mean, you know, are silent because people are not, you know, they're not fully expressing how they feel to one another, and, you know, in arguments or confrontations, but they're carrying a lot of their feelings, and there is a silent battle going on. And what I feel about gentrification, well, I think it has both positive and negative aspects. I mean, gentrification has brought so much money into Washington, and it's become this super fabulous city. Not that it wasn't fabulous before, but I mean, there's so much more here now because of gentrification, because of the influx of money that's coming to the city. But it's made it to the point. It's to the point where your average working class people cannot enjoy a lot of the things that have been brought here because, you know, it's just too expensive. I feel like with anything and with gentrification, if you are coming into someplace, one of the lines in my play is like, you know, you didn't land on the moon. There were people already here. So you have to consider the people who are already there. And I think often that is not considered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people just come in and bring what they bring, you know, often displacing things that have already been in place and traditions and a culture that's already been in place, that's just being, you know, thrown out because we're here, we have the money, and this is what we want. And so, you know, how can that not, you know, cause some animosity?
Indeed.
You know.
Yeah.
And so how can we do this? Because, you know, I don't know if we'll ever, I don't think we're going back, we will go back to being Chocolate City. But, you know, I mean, D.C. has become a melting pot, but people do have to be able to live together. And there has to be something, you know, there has to be some equity. But what I do like is that, you know, D.C. does have a progressive mayor who, I think that there are lots of accommodations made for people who may not be as wealthy, who are not wealthy. You know, I went to the wharf, which my is so fabulous now. But I mean, it's very expensive there.
It's
but
expensive to park.
Oh my God!
Once you park there, you know you just turn around and you go home.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
I mean, and God forbid you go in a restaurant and pay, you know, $25-$30 for a cocktail.
Mm.
But I did see that they had, you know, the marshmallow, the s'mores place, that where the s'mores were like $3.50. So I can take my kids. Maybe we can't go to La Vie to the restaurant, but we can go and we can sit out and we can enjoy the wharf. We can have s'mores. We can have pizza from the pizza stand. So I do like the fact that it was created to also include things for people who do not have the, exorbitant incomes, for just average working class people.
Yeah,
you know, there's something. There's got to be something for everybody.
Yeah. We are talking
something for everybody.
We are talking about the issue of gentrification. That is the focus of the play, The Intruders. It is on stage this week at Silver Springs Black Box Theater. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Omar, thanks for hanging on, calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a really serious issue. Gentrification is a cancer in the black community because it's displacing people and basically moving communities that were core, that were fundamental in raising black families. Don't forget, we were not allowed to go to the suburbs. So these communities are critical to African American, and gentrification is basically moving people out to make profit, and it's something that is serious as police brutality, as discrimination, and I don't understand why it's not a main issue in the black community. You know, universities are involved in gentrification. If you go to any urban city, Philadelphia, anywhere, New York, it's happening, and it's the leading cause of African American homelessness because it displaced them. These are communities that we grew up in where we were not allowed to go to the suburbs. So my question to you guys, why is this is not an issue that is in the forefront of our community?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Omar. So I would argue, but not speak for either one of our guests, that this play puts it in the forefront in a creative way. It is theater. And as you said, you know, Professor Katz, this isn't fluff. This is a real issue that real people are engaging in.
It's about money. It's always about money in the United States, always about money. Now, let's look at 14th Street. So 14th Street used to have winos, no lights on the street.
Streetwalkers and all
streetwalkers,
the whole
prostitutes,
bit.
Broken pavements, stores that were boarded up. And then when it became white people wanting to live there, all of a sudden there were lights. All of a sudden the pavement got fixed. All of a sudden Shiki Poo stores, which, as Hope has said, nobody can afford in the community, opened up. That's about money. It's about they don't allow or they don't do a sliding scale for people of color to live in that neighborhood. And then they don't give the people enough money who sell their homes. And then the taxes are so high. for people who don't, often people of color, who in that area, who don't have enough money to buy. And I go to 14th Street and I see all these young little white kids moving around and coming out of the brownstone houses there, and they have the money. So we always tend in America to make a choice that puts money on top of the chain, not people.
Yeah.
And that's a tremendous mistake. And it breeds animosity. And yes, the neighborhoods do, when they get gentrified, as Hope points out in our play, they do have lights, they do have police, they do have cleaned up the garbage, the litter, and the people who are homeless, etc. So there are pluses there. There are pluses. But they, at the expense of a community that has not been allowed over how many years to gather enough finances to live in these places.
Professor Katz, hold your point. I'm going to let you finish, but I've got to take a really quick break and remind our listeners that this conversation will continue at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Your phone calls and more of this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are discussing the play The Intruders. It is about gentrification, and it is on stage this week at Silver Springs Black Box Theater. My guests are playwright Hope Lynn Price Lindsay and Howard University Professor Emerita and Director Vera Katz. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Katz, please continue your point.
Well, so this could be not totally solved, but certainly addressed. If they created in these areas that they gentrified sliding scale rents, sliding scale opportunities to buy, if they restaurants that were sliding scale, if they just incorporated all the people's pocketbooks in the community, this could be addressed, and then it would be a win-win on both sides. The lights would be there, the dirty streets would be cleaned up, the value that whites do bring when they come in would be of help. Yet, most more importantly, people of color would still have a place that they knew well through their history. That, as a young man says in the play, his father got this property and he's moving nowhere from it because it's his father's land. So we don't do it sensibly. We just come in and what's the best way to make a financial killing? Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. And then it becomes the builders and the architects and the landlords. And it minuses out the human dimension.
I think some would disagree with you in when you're talking about, sharing, in the culture. We saw that the huge uprising and protests of Don't Mute DC years ago. If that is not a living portrait of the headbutting of gentrification, Professor Katz, I don't know what is, because, go-go, And the go-go culture has been part of DC since the 70s, and gentrification, some would argue, Hope Intruders, as the play is titled, came in and tried to change the longstanding culture. And as my mother would say, that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Like, there's a line in the play
One of the characters, one of the main characters, she says, well, I sure would like, I haven't had any chicken wings or mambo sauce since, you know, since they moved in, because they moved out, you know, all of, you know, some of the things that were traditionally in the community. But I think even when we think about gentrification, I mean, you know, there are some black people who are gentrifiers as well. It has become more about socioeconomics. And there, you know, and it's become more about the have and the have-nots, you know, and you know, developers coming in, white developers coming in with money, you know, building things or rehabbing things, and then the people, only people who can afford them are people, you know, with six-figure salaries, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that, and maybe some of the caller was saying, why hasn't it become a bigger movement? Well, you know, a lot of times when people, working-class people, going to work every day, you have kids, all that, don't necessarily have time to be activists. But, you know, this dialogue and conversations going on, you know, in communities, you know, between neighbors, between family members, you know, so not everybody can go out and start a movement or be a big part of the movement, but the conversation is there. And that's really why I wanted to do this play, is because these conversations are there. And I said a silent battle ensues because, you know, people are talking, there is a battle, but it may not be, you know, so physical, but there is, you know, it's kind of like the haves and the have-nots. And I don't even want to say that everybody in these communities were the have-nots, because that's not the case. But it's just made things so expensive that even, you know, working class people have, you know, really cannot afford to live in D.C. or to take part in many of the things that are offered now, because it just costs money.
Yeah. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kenny, calling from Brandywine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, at no point has, you know, any colonizer ever cared about when they invaded an area or a community or space that's occupied by a person of color or people of color, going back to the Indians, to the Africans, and what's known as Africa, now known as Africa. They've never cared about where they go in and where they take over. So I guess the question and the issue for me is that, you know, rather than being reactive, I think the plan or the approach should be, how do we stop this? How do we mitigate the issue? How do we empower people to retain their properties, to have more interest and value in their communities? So that way that, you know, now that they've come in and start the gentrification process, the property values have gone up, they can actually retain their properties and begin to establish economical wealth and maybe generational wealth. That's just my point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go right ahead. That's a very good point. That's a very good point, because you know, like you said, D.C. has a rich culture, a rich culture. And I think that, you know, if we look back historically, I mean, you know, we've been poor, but we had values and we cared about where we lived and we took care of it and we took care of each other. Okay. And so we've had a rich culture. And like he was saying, you know, there's a whole monologue about colonization. And the comparison in the play. And yes, just coming in to, you know, remove the current culture and the things that have been in place and the traditions that have been in place for years. And, so it is very much, you know, similar to colonization. Yes, you know, the colonizers had, you know, the attitude where, you know, it didn't matter what was here already. We are bringing and changing We're bringing what we bring, and that's what's going to stand. And so that's the attitude that is really addressed in the play.
Mm.
Okay? It's like, you know, well, we've been here. To ask us anything.
So
nobody consulted with me, you know? So it starts that dialogue, you know? It doesn't solve all the problems of gentrification, but it opens up that dialogue, and it raises all the critical issues in a human way. And ultimately, it addresses the question, you know, how are we going to make this work? Or how will this work? Or how can we do this where everybody's got a piece of the pie?
So you know? Let me allow me to upset the apple cart.
Okay.
Because you said something, you know, a little bit earlier that really, really struck me. And Kenny from Brandywine was, you know, talking about what was happening in D.C. But I was also struck by where Kenny lives. Because Kenny lives in Brandywine.
Okay.
And not all gentrification or gentrifiers, you know, as you suggested, are white. Because as a person who grew up in this area, if you look at what is happening now in Charles County and what we saw more than a decade ago in rural Charles County,
mm-hmm.
that was historically predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
But then you had new housing, new single-family homes
mm-hmm.
coming to these areas. And these are the six-figure, two-family, six-figure households mm-hmm. who are black people moving out and changing the culture. And Kenny was saying, well, we need to retain the land and all of that. I would imagine that there were some white people down there who probably were thinking the same thing. And we did see, and we have covered on this program, some disruptions because there was a lot of racial pushback by white people in Charles County.
Mm-hmm.
And so often when people think about gentrification, they think about white people coming into urban areas, as the definition suggested when I read it earlier. But I would imagine it's not just about urban areas. It can be any area where you
it's
have some people.
It's about money.
Yeah.
It's always about money. And money in America is power. Culture and tradition and all the values that each group has are not as important as money and power. And that's the way it is. So how is it going to change? It's only going to change when people of color get the power to protest the way they did in Georgia. Every time you get, you know, people of color together and they make a statement and they demand something, it happens. And
yeah.
That's the only way things change in this country.
Yeah.
Demand and vote. Get out in the streets and vote. Vote, get out in the streets.
Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. Ashaki calling from Northeast D.C. Ashaki, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how y'all doing this evening? I was telling the young lady that, you know, being a fourth-generation Washingtonian makes me stick and stay to the property. Listening to the conversation, we're the only house on a block of 16 houses that still have a black family that owns the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every day I'm getting notices of $1 million, $4 million, I don't want to sell my house. Thank you so very much. But this was what the question that I have. Money is always going to be the root of it. But why wasn't our money good enough to handle our community? You know, it's money and it's politics. And people get it. And you just said it, how a lot of us have been run out of D.C. to other areas like PG County, Montgomery County, Charles County. But the reality of it is this. If we don't stand up and fight, we're always going to be pushed around. That's exactly how we got, you know, Christopher Columbus discovered America. They come into our neighborhoods, and what they do is they try to erase our history.
Yeah.
And if we don't take a stand, then, again, we'll be pushed out of the history books. We'll be pushed out of the neighborhoods. We'll be pushed out. And I am so interested in seeing this play this weekend. I'm going to make time to come see it.
Oh, great. And you are so right. Our history, our culture, our traditions are important. And that's part of really what I say in the play, you know? Mm-hmm. Please come see
the
play because
that's the belief
resonate.
That we have
it
to instill in our children. We have to make sure that you don't erase us. You can't erase
exactly.
us from history. You
and
can't
also,
do that. That's not what we're going to allow. But until
exactly.
we stand up for what we really believe in and stop talking about it and do, we're going to continue
exactly.
to get the same thing. And it doesn't
exactly.
just have to be in the urban area. It's not just in our areas, because he just made that point, how we moved into the suburbs and took over those communities as well.
Right, right.
But it's not costing us $1 million for a one-bedroom apartment.
Exactly.
Most
exactly.
Washingtonians can't even live in D.C. today.
And let me, Ashaki, thank you so much for your input. I need mm-hmm. to put the apples back in the cart that I just upset, and now upset it again. Because the elephant in the room is, and Ashaki was suggesting this in her comments, but if you are a Black person living in the District of Columbia, if you've been there for a while, and then you see white people moving into your community, and then all of a sudden the value of the homes in your community goes up, let's just call it, you know, why is it that white people, based on these income rates that go up as a result of gentrification, why do they appear to be more valuable than the Black people who have always been there?
And Hope asks that question in the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a question. That is part of the dialogue in the play. And we've been historically devalued. Okay, so that's nothing new. But, you know, because this basically was a Black town, you know, Black people, you know, held power in D.C. And not that they don't now, but it's, you know, what people have to remember is that, you know, from institutional racism, from redlining and everything, we have not been able to build the generational wealth that white people have been able to build. But what Black people have to understand is that if that was grandma's house, you know, keep it in the family. You know, let the next generation take, you know, grandma's house that maybe she paid $30,000 or $40,000 for is now worth $800,000. And it is hard to turn down all that money if somebody is trying to buy it from you. But what we have to do is we have to build generational wealth. We have to own our properties. And so, you know, we can, you know, encourage people to hold on to their properties, become part of the movement that's, you know, bring, you know, if the communities are growing and becoming enhanced and, you know, we have to be part of it as well. And
yeah.
I think that's the main issue. We have to be part of it as well. It's not you come in and you take over and our everything, we're pushed to the curb. And no, we're here.
Yeah. Before I go to Maurice, I did want to ask Professor Katz something because, you know, Professor Katz, you have a very unique perspective on this issue. You were at Howard University for years. As you said, you are a Jewish woman. you worked with, you know, black people, black culture for very many years.
Take 55.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to let you have that one, but as a, you know, as a Jewish woman, briefly take us inside, you know, the conversation about this issue with, you know, members of the Jewish culture. What, you know, what do they say about issues of gentrification, whether it's what they've experienced or what they are seeing now? What, talk to us about that.
Well, first of all, people, even though, you know, we picketed and I was on those lines demanding that people could live anywhere they wanted. When I first came to Washington, D.C., we were denied to rent a house in the area around AU, American University, because of our Jewish persuasion. That's what they told us. We couldn't rent the house at that point. That was the late 60s. So people always want to live with each other. Jews want to live in their own group. Blacks want to live in their own group. They're more comfortable. And that's always the case. So I've seen that in both groups, that they want to be with their own. And that's understandable. And then the foods become important, like Hope talks about mambo sauce, and Jews talk about knishes. And so, you know, all of that becomes important, all the cultural attachments to the group. Many Jewish people have tried to interrelate or work with or become involved in the civil rights movement and politics that involve African Americans, Latinos, etc. So we have a sense as Jewish people of what it is to be on the bottom of the ring. You know, we have that sense. And so many of us are interested in and identifying it and understand that. But we've also know our history is the only way we've survived, the only way, because there are many less Jews in the whole world than there are people of color, okay? The only way we've survived is through acquisition of money.
Hmm.
That's the only way we've managed to stay and not lose, as Hope's saying. We don't lose, she doesn't want to lose who her people are, of course not. And that's the only way we've been able to survive. So we become part of both the positive, the assistance to, the caring for, and also part of the problem, because money is important for us to stand firm and plant our feet here in America and not be persecuted the way we were for centuries, even before the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So as the same situation as gentrification is confusing, because there are some good things about gentrification and certainly a lot of bad things, it's the same thing in this topic of Jews and their opinion or their interest in people of color. Yes, we want to be assistance and caring and relationships, etc. But we have to hold on to what we have, because we're always thrown out of every country unless we have some power, and our power is money.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. So it's difficult for all of these groups, you know, very difficult. Now, generally, the kind of Jews I know are people who are very interested in the black culture and the richness of it and what it has given to America, whether it's the music, whether it's the fashion, whether it's the athletics pride, you know, whether it's the Williams sisters, for example. All of that, Jews are very impressed and respect African Americans for that very strongly, very strongly. At the same time, the connection is sometimes fraught. Sometimes it's great and it works. Sometimes it's fraught. So that's the way it goes. Remember in Georgia when we had Warnick running at the same time that Ossoff was running? And that was wonderful, and they both were voted in, and they both worked together. That's wonderful. When we can work together, it's the best thing ever. And the more people who learn that it's the best thing ever when we can work together, the better this country will be.
Yeah.
But it's an uphill battle, and we all know that.
Let me go to Maurice. Maurice, thanks for hanging on, calling from Southeast D.C. What's on your mind?
Yeah, how y'all doing today?
Just fine.
Gentrification is good and is bad at the same. It has its pluses and its minuses. But, you know, I think when we talk about this, especially when we talk about gentrification in Washington, D.C., I'm a Washington, D.C. native. My grandmother came to Washington, D.C. in 1939 when she was 19. You know what I mean? And so when we talk about gentrification in Washington, D.C., we can't overlook race. I know money and I know power have a lot to do with it, but like the other previous caller was saying, you know, why it seems like black people's or people of color's money is excluded from this. And historically as a country, I mean, since the time of rebuilding America after the Civil War, you know, we never got what we were supposed to get. When you talk about racing towns like Tulsa, Oklahoma,
right.
You know, and today when you talk about Washington D.C. and you talk about gentrification, they erased us through the drug epidemic, through the crack epidemic, through various means of covert, even though, you know, we had the drugs in our hands.
Yeah.
And yes, we've killed each other.
Well, Maurice, finish up your point. I'm really low on time.
Yeah, I apologize.
That's all right.
You know, a lot of these things were instituted to get us out of the neighborhood. It isn't just like the money. Oh, all of a sudden we can't afford to live in the neighborhood. Where did all of the residents go? They didn't just move out into the suburbs. Half of the population was killed by drugs or guns.
Yeah. Well, Maurice, thank you so much for sharing your input with us, and always good to have a D.C. native in this. Hope,
yes.
What did you learn from writing this play? You know, creative people may, and I know this, you know, you start with an idea, and it takes on a life of its own. And sometimes what you started with isn't what you end with, but the thing that always comes out of it is a better understanding of the issue and yourself. What did you learn?
Yes. What did I learn? I think that with every piece of writing that I do, they say art is a reflection of life. And with every piece of writing that I do, it's really to express something. I mean, I learn from it, but more importantly, there's something that I have to say.
Aha.
And it's like, how can I say this in a way that will be most touching and will resonate with people and will touch people and stir people. So I think God is in all of my work. So it's like I'm always trying to find the love, you know, in every situation and bring that to the forefront. But it's really, you know, just really trying to express, you know, through my own lens, you know, just all the different perspectives. And like, how do they feel? Well, how would she feel? Well, how would you feel?
Yeah.
You know, because it's important that everybody is taken into consideration. And so with this play, that's really what I wanted to do. Because like I said, it's a silent battle. I mean, everybody's talking about it in their own homes or communities, but a lot of people are not talking about it out loud. And so I wanted to talk about it out loud. And so that was my goal. That was my goal. And, you know, with each piece of writing I do, I find, you know, I grow in some way.
Right.
So, you know, I'm so pleased. We have a brilliant cast. Many of them came out of the theater department at Howard University. We have a brilliant director, Vera Katz, who's trained everybody from Felicia Rashad to Chadwick Boseman, Taraji Henson. Everybody who's known that came out of Howard, most of them spent some time in Vera's classroom. And you know, you read Taraji's book, I mean, they all mention her.
Yes.
But I just think that this has been a gift for me, because to be able to express, you know, to for this to be organic and for me to express this and have it on stage and presented by such a fabulous cast, and I'm so happy because it really resonates with people.
Well,
and,
let us,
and that's what art should do.
Yes,
know?
Indeed. Well, unfortunately, Professor Katz, I am out of time, but I was about to say that I'm glad that your voice and your talents are still very, very active in the theater community, and it is such a blessing to have you.
I just want to say real quickly.
I am out of time, unfortunately, Dr. Katz. Professor Katz, I've got to say goodbye. But I just wanted to say, yes, Intruders, Silver Springs, Black Box Theater this week. Hope Lynn Price Lindsay, and Professor Emerita Vera Katz, thank you so much for talking to us. That is The Daily Drum for this Wednesday, September 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.